Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 108. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with, currently in California, Tim Elliott.
Hey, top of the morning here in pitch dark Healdsburg, California.
Yeah, but how warm is it?
I haven't checked outside, but it's quite warm. It's at least 50 degrees, yeah, maybe 60 degrees warmer than what you guys have to deal with.
Oh, go 79 degrees colder and you got it.
And I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Yeah, minus 20 on my deck this morning.
Oh, wow.
Although I'm not on the deck now.
And down where it's worse than a witch's teat, Phil Wilson.
Tim, your pipes are frozen, by the way. So
yeah.
Oh, great. That's just what I need.
Water is shooting out of your chimney.
Yeah, it was 19 below when we woke up this morning, and the kids and I were out doing science experiments. So, you know, where you boil the water for 2 minutes and then throw it up in the air and make clouds. It's very fun.
That one never
gets old.
Very fun.
Yeah, I'm sure Sven is going to be out there doing that on TV.
Actually, Jonathan Juhas did it this morning. So,
oh, okay.
Not an original idea by any means.
So this past week, Phil, you did a post about Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Yes, she had her innovation summit at the U of M. And now I'm sorry to say that I wasn't able to make it, but I did do some follow-up with them and try to get some more information. You know, the concept was to roll out this, to highlight this package of innovative legislation she plans on introducing. But damned if I can find any specifics on the legislative.
Oh, really?
Stuff that she's going to introduce. I mean, it's, I talked to their press office and so far I've gotten nothing from them. So let's just say it'll be really cool. I don't know.
Yeah. Aren't you a citizen investigative journalist?
That's me.
Come on, Phil.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, I can only go so far. I'm not going to travel to Washington and find out what the hay's going on. So,
well, Larry didn't call me, but what is the deal with Eric Schmidt leaving? He's not leaving. He's being elevated to.
They're shuffling the deck.
Executive chairman, and it's 10 years to the day, apparently. Did you note that no. Larry Page doesn't take over till April 4th, my birthday, but Eric Schmidt was named CEO in April 2001. I didn't think it was that long ago. He had this in the plans that 10 years is enough, you know?
Well, I think he's going to be okay. I mean, even if he got the boot, quote unquote, he's going to cash out $335 million and he has $5.4 billion worth of stock left when he's, he's cashed out.
He's going to be struggling, man. I know.
Well, according to the Journal, he's got designs on a public life. You know, he wants to do something in the public sector. So,
yeah,
you know, he'll run for governor when Jerry Brown gets through wrecking the state for good.
No, he'll be head of the NSA.
There you go. Oh man. But Larry, I mean, you know, there are people saying, well, is he the right guy to be, you know, putting in there? I mean, the guy, he doesn't much care for process and, you know, he's all about product, but they're saying he's got a lot of good people around him. We're going to start hearing about some of the senior executives that you've never heard of who are really quite going to be quite important now.
Well, I think that they need somebody that's all about product. Believe me, they got plenty of people that are about process. They're going to be lousy with people about process. But I think it speaks to you, your points, Graham, in the past about, actually putting together products and marketing products and that sort of a thing.
Well, and that gets into, in fact, there's a huge question on Quora about, you know, what should Larry Page do now that he's CEO? And I jumped in with one of the favorite memes that I've talked about and others locally here is that they need more right brain people. You know, that's a favorite line of Randy Guy's. you know, and you know, they just are so unlike, for example, an Apple, you know what I mean? They're all about engineers and left brain. And it's like, it seems like the right brain side never really comes out, you know?
Yeah, and it's really too bad because clearly it's not working.
The growth is slowing, and how many bombs of product launches have they had? Do we have enough time to go through the litany of how many products have bombed? I don't think so.
Well, let me start up a Google Wave on that one, Graham.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I think this is it's the right time for them to do it because they're just too big of a company, and they need a change to compete with Facebook. I mean, the world is moving very quickly, and they would turn into kind of another Microsoft sort of thing if they didn't make the change. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think whether Larry's the right guy or not, it's good that they made a change while they're still riding pretty high. And hopefully they become a more nimble organization.
Well, you know what I found interesting about and I'm sure you do this too, Tim, is you've got clients on Google Apps, the Google Sites, and there's a Google App Marketplace where you can have all sorts of project management and CRM and all kinds of different apps that you can have single sign-on and people can access them. But to your point, Graham, about them being left brain, is all this stuff just doesn't look very good. You know, it's not pleasing to the eye. There's no eye candy. And then when it comes to all these Google apps and the Google Apps Marketplace, there isn't any design guidelines, or there isn't any user interface guidelines. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, it's kind of like back to the DOS days where people can do whatever they want. So as a consequence, when you plug in one of these new apps into your Google Apps, it's a completely different paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's face it, they're not known for beautiful design and experience. I mean, it's just minimalist to the extreme almost, you know. And design and marketing. I mean, you know, when you talk about product and process, I think they could definitely use a better process for their marketing side of things. And, they've got to do something. I agree with Tim that, you know, it's Facebook that's the big, that is a big threat to them right now. And, you know, and there's no secret they're in direct competition with Apple and, you know, in many ways as well, certainly on the mobile front.
Well, then they're going to launch their own Groupon, according to Mashable.
Yeah, what was with that?
Yeah,
another
talk about
clone.
That. We'll talk about that more. Yeah. But what about this thing about Steve Jobs leaving? What are you guys' thoughts, Phil? What do you think about him exiting?
Well, you know, my guess is that there's been a recurrence of the cancer, and that happens with a lot of cancer survivors or cancer patients. That's probably never a good thing. But at the same time, from a business perspective, he did it at the right time. When you roll out, 78% growth, right on the heels of the CEO taking a leave of absence. That little dip was like non-existent. And I remember sending you a text when I saw the Jobs announcement, Steve, and hold on to your hats because there's going to be a little bumpy ride tomorrow. And it was like nothing.
Yeah.
It recovered very quickly. But the way they timed it with their earnings announcement, which was just another blowout, as always seems to happen. But it was well planned and well timed. I mean, I don't think this is anything that just came up in the last week, you know.
Oh, no. God, no.
No, they carefully planned this over a holiday weekend, and then hey, did you see? Maybe you didn't see. I tweeted yesterday that on CNBC there was a story about how the bloggers called the results way better than the street analysts did.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that.
So another great quarter, and but personally, I'm very comfortable with Tim Cook, and I think most of the market is, and I think the stock held up well because of that.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the blowout earnings that I think you mentioned, Graham, about Google nailing it, but certainly Apple did. And then, Phil, you just mentioned the growth rate and so on. It's incredible. I've only seen one dissection on Silicon Alley News about Apple's growth and Apple's market share and everything else, and that it's not net new growth. It's as BlackBerry as RIM and others are downtrending dramatically, Apple's getting a lot of that share, but that there's still $30 billion worth of market out there that isn't being addressed this year. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, what comes out next with an iPhone 5, what comes out next with Android devices to snag a lot of that. And then also, what's the rollover rate of phones? I mean, it's just incredible.
Oh, you mean with people moving replacing. Up, upgrading? Yeah,
moving up to new phones.
Well, with 2-year contracts, it's probably not as fast as the manufacturers would like it to be. But
yeah,
but I know I'm waiting for that 5. The 4 is just so yesterday, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, my problem is that I desperately want a MacBook Air, and then there's new MacBooks coming out, and then I know there'll be a new iPad, and there'll be a new iPhone 5. It's like, that's I can't buy it all.
Stop, you know? Well, you sell them on Craigslist or whatever, you know? I mean, that seems to work pretty well. They hold, the old ones hold their value, that's for sure.
Well, if we had Tim's money, we could probably do it, but.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't have an iPad yet. I'm waiting for, cameras and lower prices.
Yeah.
Hey, what did you think of that Sprint offer for the Galaxy Tab? I mean, I didn't know it. $299 with a 2-year contract? That's a pretty tempting price for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, I think, but isn't the data like $30 a month or something?
I don't know. Well, it's got to probably in that range, but Sprint tends to be kind of low on the low side on the data plans, don't they? So, but
well, they just raised price, right, Phil?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I read that.
They raised price like $10 a month on your data plan.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that price.
It came out, it was announced this week. I don't think it goes into effect until next month or something. But the brilliant thing that Apple negotiated with AT&T to go on month to month on the iPad is really a good idea. So that if you need it, you turn it on,
yep.
You pay your $25 or $30, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done, you just cancel the thing right on the iPad. I mean, that's a great idea. And so I think it's flawed to have this, cell phone model on the Galaxy Tab where you have to pay for yet another data plan.
I agree.
So.
Well, maybe they'll catch up and start offering pay as you go. But that $299 price point, I mean, my God, the cheapest iPad is $499.
Yeah, well, no, I think that's a good price for that device, and it's a great device.
Yeah.
But it's hobbled by this dependency to demand that you buy another data plan. I already have a data plan for my phone. I don't need another one. So particularly because my phone does Wi-Fi tethering. So
it's its
own Wi-Fi hotspot. So if there was a Galaxy Tab that was Wi-Fi only and it was $299, I'd go out and get one.
Well, there was an interesting analysis of Apple's $3.9 billion investment that they mentioned on their Q1 earnings call. And people have picked it apart and said it's likely that they're securing LCD supplies from various vendors. And that's why we're not seeing a lot of 10-inch tablets being introduced, because essentially Apple's cornered the market on production. And as a consequence, looking out strategically, especially for 2011 and into early 2012, that there won't be anybody in the world that can compete on the supply chain like Apple can. And this is all Tim Cook, looking out far enough in advance to say, how do we not only drive the cost down, but how do we essentially deflect any other oncoming vendors
Wow. So. Yeah. They're on a roll, I'll tell you. He's a supply chain genius, you know.
Well, it'll be interesting. We should bring in our guest today.
Yes.
And the guy that we're going to be bringing in, you all know well, and probably most of our listeners do, formerly at WCCO, John Danzer. And John is now the vice president of interactive media at Twin Cities Public Television.
Hey, this is John.
Hey, John, it's Steve Borsch, and I'm on with my crew on Minovate.
That's right. We're with the crew.
Good morning, guys. Hi, Phil.
We're all rowing as fast as we can.
It takes a little while to do that in this weather.
Mad as it ever. Yeah, the water's so damn hard.
Oh, man. So how are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. Well, it's been a while since we've had a chance to chat.
I'm grateful for the time today.
So, John, now that you're at TPT, do you have to talk like this now?
Really, really lowly and low.
Good times, good times.
No.
Well, tell us first and foremost, John, the biggest difference. First, tell us what you're doing at TPT, and then tell us the difference in the culture and in the style and the way things are between CCO, the commercial side, and TPT. Sure. The non-commercial side. Tell us a little.
Thanks. First of all, thanks very much for inviting me to be on with you guys. I'm grateful for that. And also thanks for all the support that you, Steve, Phil, Graham, and others at Minovate do to help support innovation in Minnesota. You do a great job of that.
Oh, thanks, man.
It's really a cool place to work in the interactive space. When I first told people back at CCO that I had decided I was going to try a new challenge, I think a lot of them had questions about that, and a lot of them were related to, you know, boy, it's going to be really different. When in fact, there's a lot of things that are quite similar. Some of them, one person came up to me and said, "So you just, you know, kind of want to take it easy now?" They had this impression that, you know, you're leaving the commercial daily news environment, so things have been really busy for you, and you're going to go someplace else, and things will slow down, you kind of fade, and it's not been anything like that at all. You know, when you talk about similarities, it's a busy place with very talented people, just like CCO, and, you know, they're working hard to do the best they can for their particular audience, and I think I'm proud of the exceptional quality that that we produce here. There are a lot of differences from the two different places. My role here is, my official title is Vice President of Interactive, so I'm helping work to build out an interactive group within Twin Cities Public Television to better serve its audiences no matter where they're at. I work on interactive experiences that are part of local productions, both for television and some productions that we do just for the web, and also working on developing interactive experiences that are associated with national documentaries, things that run on PBS nationwide, and then we build websites and other pieces that go with those documentaries that end up on PBS.org. So it's a lot of great work that I get to be part of, and it touches a lot of different pieces of the building. You know, there are some differences. The missions ultimately are different at CCO or any other commercial media company. You're really dominated by a drive for demographics and ultimately profit. In environments like that, journalism ends up being a means to that end. It's still a great place to work and do something that you enjoy and that I hope has value to an audience, but ultimately the mission is commercial. Whereas at TPT, the mission, fortunately, I think, is focused more on the journalism and the quality and the service. You know, the folks here work as hard as they can to be efficient, because that doesn't mean that you turn a greater profit. It means that you can invest some of those efficiencies in doing even more work and doing better work. So the mission's a little bit different. Another big change for me has been not having the chance to be part of a daily news environment, like all the time. I miss that. I grew up in newsrooms for more than 20 years being part of that. And when big stories happened, I knew first and jumped into action and tried to do our best to cover it. excuse me. So I missed that part of my professional life. I still try and keep plugged in, but I'm plugged in a lot of different ways working on other projects here. What I don't miss is the 2:30 in the morning phone call saying, hey, there's flooding in southern Minnesota. You got to get up and you got to come in and you got to do it now.
Oh, man. So,
Those are calls that I don't miss. I don't think my family does either. Production timelines, I think, are different. At least where the places I worked in commercial television, you rarely planned more than a week or two in advance. Sure, you thought about how we're going to cover the RNC when it's here, but the general rule was you were reacting a lot to things as they developed because you had. You were just turning around so many stories in so many different ways that you were just doing what you could to keep going. And here you have some flexibility with spending a little bit more time considering the best way to do the job that you do. I appreciate that. And it also means that you get to do really quality work. And because that quality work takes time, doesn't, I think, mean that you work inefficiently. It's just a little bit different. And the audiences and the expectations of a place like WCCO and a place like TPT are a little bit different. And so you try and do things and deliver stories or documentaries or products that are tailored to the folks that you're trying to serve.
Well, you know, one thing that back in December, there was an Aspen Institute and Knight Foundation report that was released called Rethinking Public Media, more local, more inclusive, more interactive. Yeah. And I didn't really analyze it and dig into it too deeply, but it was one of the things that, to me, really put some meat on the bone of what everybody's been talking about, which is the future of investigative journalism is public media.
Right.
Because you have the time, you can dig in and really address stories that might take a year or more to unfold. Yep. And so a big piece of that though is you know sharing content and doing things that are interactive and that are online and that are mobile and so people have access to stuff in new and fundamentally innovative ways. Is that kind of the zeitgeist that's going on at TPT? Are people really thinking about the depth and breadth of journalism overall as it pertains to public media?
Sure. There's a couple, I think, things that you bring up as part of that question. I mean, anytime anybody talks about the fact that there's trouble for journalism, that you know investigative pieces aren't being done as much in the commercial side, that's troublesome to me, worrisome, because I'm a journalist at heart and I value the work that quality stories or the value that quality stories have. I think for TPT, the very fact that we're working to build upon an interactive team that was already here with some great people, but the fact that I'm here trying to do some of the work that I'm doing is the signal that this is really critical for TPT, that it's an important focus. It's been stated from our leaders here that this is something that we really think is important for our future. And so that's one of the things that's attractive to me, that this is a place that is very serious about interacting and doing it with all kinds of digital tools, but ultimately allowing users to have a way to be part of the process, a way to, you know, give us feedback or, you know, help us do our jobs better because we're open to listening. Some of the greatest investigative journalism right now going on is in public media, places like Frontline, and that's because that kind of work takes a lot of time.
Right. Right.
Well,
right.
And money with it. Yes.
Of course. And there's a lot of pressure on commercial media places, and all for understandable reasons. It's just a different situation that makes that kind of work increasingly difficult. And with all the pressures on journalism and media right now, those places are trying hard, but having been part of that and certainly watching some of the developments for our newspapers and magazines, that's a real challenge right now. Ultimately, my sense of it is that I don't love that this is happening, but there'll probably be fewer commercial media places doing similar work. Right now in even Twin Cities, you've got four main newsrooms doing a lot of things that are similar.
Right.
And my fear is ultimately, and by the way, two newspapers doing things that are similar to major newspapers. And my fear is that, you know, eventually we'll have to consolidate because of the business pressures. My hope isn't that, the greater number of people doing this kind of work, the better. But the interesting part, and I think the exciting part for me, is that public media, both on television and radio, is offering something that's additive, that is unique and different, perhaps a little bit more in depth, I hope, with greater value and longer lasting value.
Well, John, let's talk a little bit about this. Obviously, innovation and interactive is a field that is constantly changing. You're constantly trying to move forward.
Sure.
Given the funding issues that you face, I mean, it's not like selling more advertising to Budweiser is an opportunity for you to
right.
you know, continue fill the coffers. A lot of that is, of course, based on the fundraising that you guys do, but also to some extent the funding that is provided by the government. Tell me how this current climate in Washington towards public broadcasting is going to impact innovation at those outlets. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know how much I can get into all of that. I think we're fortunate, at least in Minnesota, that there's a strong sense of civic support for public media. And so the vast majority, not only for us here in Minnesota, but even nationally, the support for programming comes from individual donors and viewers. And we're fortunate that people value the kind of work that we do here. I think TPT, and the reason why I'm excited to be here, is we don't feel like it's an optional thing to innovate and to work to be more interactive with users. You know, the political climate and the pressures will be what they'll be. I think our goal is to try to produce the greatest value to our audiences so that they recognize that this is something that we want to make sure is around. That it's a service that we think is something that is really helpful and valuable to our lives. And I think that speaking to a wider audience and an engaged audience on all kinds of different platforms is a great way to prove to folks that what we do here has great long-lasting value. So it's something we don't really have a choice but to do.
We talk a lot about journalism. We talk a lot about news when we talk about public broadcasting. You know, there's more to it than just news for you, isn't there? I mean, you're going to oversee a lot more than just the journalism part of public television for the Twin Cities. Am I right?
Yeah, sure. At its core, at least from my perspective, what we do is a lot of journalism. We create programming that covers the arts, and Minnesota Original, a great weekly program that highlights wonderful art and other expression here in Minnesota. But beyond doing documentaries about topics or things about the Constitution or slavery or really meaty topics or something on architecture or development in Lower Town of St. Paul, I'm also working just within a station that is trying to develop new ways to do whatever it does. That means some technological advancements. You guys are maybe familiar with the Minnesota Video Vault, which is an extraordinary resource with unbelievable depth. I mean, thousands and thousands of hours of video, historical stuff, current things.
Hard to share, but, though.
Yep, and that's exactly where I was going. Yeah, was okay. I mean, the and people recognize that. But part of my job is to say, okay, here's this resource. Now, how can we use this and how can we share it in ways that is the most valuable to the people we're trying to serve? How can it be more accessible? How can it be embedded or shareable? We don't know exactly what those answers are, but yeah. That's part of my role is to try and figure those things out. We're looking at ways to be more active and mobile and experiences optimized for tablets. Just trying to find new ways to be more efficient in the way we roll out interactive tools and experiences in coordination with documentaries that we produce or in coordination with partners, other nonprofits, and trying to serve really as a leader in the nonprofit world in Twin Cities and in the rest of Minnesota to show, here's some things that we could do that make things better for everyone. We're also trying to become more aggressive in social media spaces. Again, all trying to find ways that we're more engaged with our audience and paying attention to what they're saying. And ultimately, and this is something that we were trying to do over at CCO as well in a lot of different ways. The more you pay attention to what your audience is telling you and incorporate that into what the work you're doing, my feeling is that the better your work will become.
Well, and you really drove that at CCO, and I got to tell you, and I know I've said this to you on a couple of occasions, but CCO is the most engaged, socially engaged company out there, in terms of local media.
Thank you. And I'll tell you, I mean, they're different. It was funny when I came here, you folks say things, and understandably, so are we going to do daily news now? Or is your plan to do, I remember reading somewhere, someplace, somebody said a TPT version of The Wire, which some of your listeners may be familiar with as a kind of a journalism experiment that we developed over at CCO. And the answer is, of course not. The goals that we have are different. The audiences and the expectations are different, but that doesn't mean we wouldn't take some of the ideas that we might have had from a commercial part of the media and try to make them apply in a nonprofit, in a public space. So, I mean, our goal really will be to become much more engaged in social spaces because it's public media. I mean, let's talk to the public about what we're doing and use their input to make it better.
Hey, John, Graham here.
Hey, Graham, how are you?
I'm doing good, and congratulations again on your position. But when I heard you talking about social media, that brought my question forth about staff. I'm curious to know the staff situation at TPT because I don't know much about it. I'm curious, do you have your own staff, and how big is the staff overall, journalist editorial side versus business side? And I guess in that same vein, has it been under pressure, as we all know that staffing in newsrooms on the traditional media side has been under pressure?
Sure. Well, the staffing, at least from the interactive department, there's some great people who are here before I got here. And so it's really my role to work with them and build upon it. We have five people that are working in more exclusively and interactive. As far as, comparing what we have here to something at CCO, it's very similar as far as the number of people working editorially and business side. So there's not a lot of difference there. I think any organization. It doesn't have to be media. It doesn't have to be public. It doesn't have to be commercial. Felt a lot of pressure in the last couple of years. And that, you know, TPT wasn't immune to that. But, you know, our position right now is one of growth, especially in the interactive space. Because
yeah, I hit your jobs page and I saw a couple of positions mm-hmm. listed there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we're working to do that carefully and strategically. But it's also one where we know it's a critical part of our future, and we're going to do it and do it well.
I mean, I'm interested, John, and this is Tim, by the way.
Hi, Tim.
To pick up on your statement about mobile devices and optimization of your mobile apps for tablets, do you think that the kind of content that you're delivering as we watch them on smaller screens is going to evolve over time and change?
Well, better. Yeah, I mean, I think it better. It's kind of hard to always predict exactly what that will be. We kind of have to look at what our audience expectations are and, you know, what they're most interested in. Right now, you know, if you just stop and look at, okay, why did people come to TPT.org? Well, the biggest reason they come there is scheduling information. They don't come there like they might be coming to a place like CCO for weather or news or it's just a different expectation. So the first place we start is, okay, what can we do to make the experience of people who are coming to where, you know, our site better for them? Can we build, whether it's a native app or a web app or something that's optimized for the platform that they're most interested in using in a way that's helpful to them? If it's scheduling or their reminders, are there different ways you can look at the schedule? Could you do on-demand in association with some kind of a scheduling app? We don't know. I've been here 8 weeks, and we're starting to work our way through that. But I think it's important that we recognize that, as you guys well know, that the expectations of all users is I want to use what I want to use on the platform I choose at the time I want.
Right.
And that's part of our mission is let's figure that out. Let's figure out what we can deliver that people will find of value and do it in a way that is most convenient to them.
How much of the work that you do is coordinated with your colleagues at other PBS and with PBS nationally?
Yeah, great question. The situation's a little bit different from where I was coming from because I was part of a station that was owned and operated by a network company. So that was perhaps a little bit more together because you're the same company. But the good news is that you have some really great leaders in the interactive space and across the country that I've talked to on the phone. I've been to DC and met with leaders from New York and DC and, San Francisco, they're kind of big markets for public media. And then we work very closely, especially on these documentaries that we're producing for nationwide distribution. When you do that, you create essentially a companion website that goes along with it. And you work very closely with the folks at PBS Interactive and PBS.org. They've got a great team there and one that's developing tools to help stations that are building interactive experiences for a nationwide audience to be more effective and efficient. So it's the setup's a little bit different, but the coordination is still important, and we work with them pretty closely.
That's great. Hey, well, John, one last question before we let you go.
Sure.
How much worse is the commute?
Question. It depends on the snow. There have been days when I sit in my car for an hour, but there are on a clean day I can do it in 25 minutes. It's a little different for me because I was a bus rider.
What I thought.
And so that was nice because I could collect my thoughts for the day and gather email, and now I'm part of the rest of the folks in line.
Texting in your car? No, yeah. Just kidding.
No, actually,
never a good idea.
No, it's not. And I was a serial iPhone addict in my car, I made a promise to my family that I would stop that, and so I worked very hard on it. And I'd encourage all your users to do the same.
That's right.
It's a scary proposition, but it's good, it's great to learn more about a new city. I mean, I've kind of spent 13 years in Minneapolis, and now I've learned about St. Paul, and so it's pretty cool. It's been a great experience so far.
Downtown St. Paul's got a lot going for it, you know. I like it over there, and
I think St. Paul does. I think there's lots going on.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
John, thank you so much. Appreciate you carving out the time.
You guys are welcome, and thank you again for inviting me. Enjoy this beautiful Minnesota weather.
Just one last thing, John. Could you do something about kind of spicing up the sets there at TPT? It's kind of dark and blue, you know? Or is that part of that? Good times.
Thanks for that feedback, Phil. We'll be sure to interactively incorporate that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That sounded a little bit sarcastic. What's up with that?
No, I'm seriously. I mean, people here recognize that there are always adjustments that come.
You are the best. You are the best.
He's such a diplomat. Yeah.
He's such a diplomat. John, take care of yourself. It's always great to have you on. So
thank you. Take care, guys.
See ya.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks, John.
Right, bye.
Well, what a great guy. He's perfect for that role. Absolutely perfect, because it's one that he has to really work within the confines of what's there, and there's a lot of major national competing interests with, public radio and PBS and American Public Media and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and all the things happening here locally. Bill Kling has been so wildly successful in the public media space and really built a juggernaut here. There's a lot of competing, I don't want to say interests, but sort of directional sorts of things that he's got to navigate. But the whole thing is changing. The whole public media direction is changing. So,
well, I mean, they it's a different paradigm, and it's a different level of success. I mean, in commercial broadcasting, success is really determined by your ratings and how much revenue you can generate with those ratings. And it's a different measuring stick in public radio, because, or public television or public media of any kind, because you have to balance, how many people you reach to with how many people you can inspire to support you. So, it's different. You can have a show that may not necessarily draw a lot of viewers or listeners, but it generates an incredible amount of funding. So it's a different sort of a thing.
Yeah. Well, he brought up the direction about social, and social is on the top of everybody's hit list. And we all know that Google tried to buy Groupon for $6 billion. And then also some people their conjecture is that that's why Schmidt is being elevated to executive chairman. Because he could have built it himself, and it looks like they're building their own, according to Mashable's exclusive story on Google launching a competitor to Groupon and Living Social.
Before we address that, Steve, to my fellow innovators and to those of you that are diligently listening to our podcast, did anybody notice the art by which Steve segued from the John Danzer discussion to the Google discussion? Did anybody? I think that every once in a while you should pause and say, that was smooth.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was exquisite.
And no editing was done at all.
No, we just moved from. And speaking of social media, it was a thing to behold, Steve.
Why, thank you, Phil. I sometimes suspect that you guys are like my kids, who will say, Dad, you're really being very nice today. What's up with that? Without saying you're an ass most days, but today you're a good guy.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. And I wonder if Groupon is kind of kicking themselves. It's like, ooh, we could have had 6 billion. Now Google's coming.
You know, I don't think they care at all because of the incredible
valuation.
Oh, yeah.
They're headed to an IPO based on a $15 billion valuation. Exactly. is the word in the fall.
Here's the thing, doesn't to me, and this is my experience, and from the broadcast side, that the IPO is like a signal to the end of innovation for your company. I mean, it seems like because all of a sudden you're a slave to the shareholders and not to advancing the product or allowing the, you know, investing in product because you want to deliver on your.
That's certainly the Facebook position. And you're not just a slave to the shareholders and the short term Wall Street thing, but to the regulators as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, limited direct contact with companies that have gone public, but you know, you have to start delivering quarterly. The 5-year plan almost goes out the window. The 2-year plan goes out the window. You know, it's all about, well, what can we deliver in the next quarter? And I always get concerned when somebody says, oh, we're going to go for an IPO. It's like, oh, do you have to, you know, that sort of,
yeah.
Well, the investors need an exit.
They do
at some point. And the founders do too.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah, but what's interesting to me is that
do the founders need an exit?
Well, I mean, they've risked their reputations, their money, and they've invested time. They should get something out of it.
Well, shouldn't they just get a piece of the profits? Isn't that why you start a business, or is the reason you start a business to exit?
That's a good question.
I think that's a great question, and I think for a lot of startups, their objective is to get an exit. I mean, their objective is not to build a business.
Isn't that kind of an issue? Isn't that kind of a problem? I mean, I believe that innovation needs to be fed, but at the same time, and maybe, you know, by feeding that, you know, okay, supposedly if you start one company, exit, start another company, you're innovating continuously. But, you know, the whole concept of I'm going to start this just to get money, not, I mean, you're just to exit and get a big payoff. Does that relate to our problems with being innovative here in the U.S.?
No, I don't. I think true entrepreneurs are in it for way, way more than the money. The money is really a minor side thing. You know, I mean, look at Zuckerberg. He has no plans to leave and now some of the early employees have been able to cash out through their secondary market, you know, the shares, the private shares of Facebook. But, you know, I think good entrepreneurs, you know, really don't care. And he's already talking about how he's going to give most of it away anyhow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, my biggest concern, though, is about this, about Google launching a competitor. Yeah, and this is when I think about all the mini demo presenters, you think about, just take one, Aaron Weber with Inveni, the movie and TV and the content social network, is that as that thing gains traction, people could either come in and buy it, some company, or they could say, well, that's really interesting, and I think we can get people to switch instantly, so let's just go ahead and knock it off. And it seems to be really relatively easy for a lot of these companies to knock others off.
I don't think so with Aaron's technology, but certainly with Groupon, that thing was not really all that defensible. And how many clones has there been? I mean, I've heard 25. I think there's way more than that when you look globally.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it wasn't very hard to knock off, but they just ran really, really fast and figured out how to raise money and hire people and, you know, get young kids on the phone dialing for dollars, you know, and signing up the merchants. And
But, you know, I talked to a guy this week, a really smart customer acquisition kind of a guy, a Harvard MBA, and he really thinks Groupon is just ripping off business. I mean, it's they're stealing the customers is what.
Well, Graham, I think you bring up a very interesting point. And I've talked about this with, you know, because we've been doing, when I was back in radio, we did half off stuff all the time. And in fact, most radio stations do it now. You hit their website and you'll get their half off deal page. And there's a point where I'm, you know, with all of this, huge discount, 50% off stuff that Groupon and many services like it are taking advantage of and doing quite well with. At some point, the businesses are going to say, well, wait a minute, I gotta stop giving this stuff away. And they're going to get burned out on the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah. It's a,
I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I just think that it can be, I mean, if you take a look at other marketing efforts especially for small businesses that may be offering a service that's like someone else's service that, you know, they can easily generate a tremendous amount of traffic and in theory sell other stuff. Now we've seen those articles about restaurants that offered some incredible discount and people came in and not only did they take advantage of only the discount, but they didn't even leave a tip. And so, right. You know, is that the kind of customer that you want?
Yeah.
And
you're seeing it in the actual coupon world now as couponing becomes more of a passion for people because technology allows us to do it
right.
A whole lot more professionally. You're seeing limitations being put out by vendors and locations that, you know, you can only use three coupons or, you know, that sort of a thing.
And a lot of these coupons, I mean, people are going to places they would have gone to anyway. You know what I mean? It's just, the merchant is paying a lot to acquire that customer. And, you know, and they, you know, they may have to come back 2-3 times before the merchant even comes close to breaking even on the deal. You know, it's an expensive way to acquire customers.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out as because of mobile and because of, you know, the ease of getting offers and coupons. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and Living Social is on a tear too with Amazon funding them. And did everybody get their half off $20 Amazon card? I didn't bother, but
no, I didn't get it.
Are they saying a million people grabbed that Living Social deal and it's probably still going on?
Well, I just got an email from a Nigeria based company that has a coupon. That's hidden in a vault.
That Prince wants to.
Still a half price deal on that $2 million payout.
I cleaned out my spam filter or spam folder this morning, and I damned if there wasn't one of those emails in there. I'm thinking to myself, my God, are people still getting away with this?
Somebody has to respond, otherwise they wouldn't do it. I think
they
would
keep doing it. Who is responding to these things?
Oh God,
my Lord. Listen, we probably ought to talk a little bit about what's coming up event-wise in the Twin Cities, and then I'll let people get on about their day, don't you think?
Yeah.
So what's coming Absolutely. Up?
Well, the Pond Hockey Championships are in full gear. They just dropped the first pucks a half an hour ago over on very cold and hard Lake Nokomis.
Yeah. Hey,
always fun to drive by that event. It's just such a fun thing to see.
Oh, it attracts a lot of people. I'm going to go over there tomorrow morning. Our local friends at TST Media now own that event and are very busy with Haberman and Associates, the PR firm originally behind it in promoting it. And it continues to just get coverage all over the place, you know, locally and nationally.
I didn't know that TST bought that.
Yeah, they did. It's going to become a real showplace for their technology. You know, their sports team and league content management system mm-hmm. called Sport Engine, and then they Sport have Engine. Event Engine.
So Event Engine.
do it, yeah, N-G-I-N. Yeah, they're going to be doing more and more sports events, obviously. But, you know, those guys are amazing. They have customers in, like, all 50 states now, and they're definitely on a roll.
Yay. Also, Mobile March is coming again, ladies and gentlemen. So look forward to that. We are set for Saturday, March 19th. We'll be at Best Buy. The details and the site and the registration should launch later today. So, you know.
Jesus, about time.
Wake the kids, alert the media. Yeah. Well, you know, you got to plan these things. We That's all, right. You know, we kind of want to have an agenda. We will be spending time, of course, with tablets. We'll be talking about QR codes and 2D codes and couponing and some very exciting stuff. Remember, it's a two-track event, developer and business. So we would love to have everybody come out. And then also we'll have another event centered around Mobile March that'll happen the night before. We call it Mobile 3D Demo Dinner and Drinks. So we'll have some mobile demos and that sort of stuff. Cool. So look
for it. Where are you going to do that? Do you know
that,
yet?
That will be at Coco at this point.
Oh nice.
In fact, Don has been calling while the podcast was going on. So we want to get the details ironed out on that. So.
Now, will Mobile March be a free event or is there a
Mobile nominal? March is a Mobile March is a paid event because we just need to pay for our expenses. We don't try to make a lot of money. So that should, I believe that's $40 this year. So
it's a bargain.
I think so. And that of course includes food and all the thing for the day. So
will there be anything on augmented reality this year?
Augmented reality.
Yeah. You know, where you hold your phone up and the app maps something over the space that you're in.
You know, I don't know if that's on the agenda yet, but there are still some holes in the agenda.
Okay.
So we'll see what we can do.
Also coming up is on the 26th at 4:30 is a welcome to Margaret Anderson Kelleher, the new president of the Minnesota High Tech Association.
That's a freebie event too. I got an email yesterday.
Said, when is that?
Come one, on, come all.
January 26th, which is next week, Wednesday at 4:30.
Where are they doing that? I've forgotten now.
They're doing it at Dorsey and Whitney.
Downtown.
I thought that was at your house. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I was going to, but, you know, I just couldn't. I can't even think of anything
funny. The
deck
has a little snow on it, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the George Foreman grill doesn't fire up, you know, too easily.
You'd be grilling your brains out, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Oh, the Minneapolis-St. Paul WordPress user group meeting is coming up next week Tim, help me out on this. Do you know?
When it is?
Yeah, it's the fourth Thursday, so that's the 27th. That's next Thursday,
right? That's correct.
At the Nerdery Sierra Bravo in Bloomington, we'll put link in the show notes.
How often do they do those?
The fourth Thursday of
every couple of months. Okay. It's not every month. Sometimes they're quarterly. It just depends.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of the Nerdery, the Overnight Web Challenge is on the docket for the 26th of March. So you can check that out at theovernightwebchallenge.com.
Fabulous.
Overnightwebsitechallenge.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tim, are you going to do another team?
Well, we're talking about getting the band back together. So we'll see.
I haven't been part of those conversations. Is should I take something from that?
Well, we're going to... I think if we do it, which it looks likely, we're gonna pick the team a little bit differently than we did last time.
That's a subtle way of saying you're out, Phil.
I didn't say Phil was out. We're gonna look at our needs. We're gonna remember what worked and what didn't last time, and.
Strangely, I don't think they need a smart ass idea guy.
Do it better.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, Pete, you've been brushing up in your PHP skills, though, right, Phil?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Right. Good.
I know somebody.
Say, speaking of the Nerdery, Sierra Bravo, I heard that Kathy Swanson's over there now.
Really?
You guys know Kathy, don't you?
Sure.
From our social media breakfast? Here she's over there as an account executive or something.
There you go.
Wow. That's cool.
Good for her.
Yeah.
It's a good group of people. Really.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So we've got lots going on, lots to talk about next week. So stick around and join us again for the Minivate Gang podcast a week from today, and or whenever you'd like to download and listen to it. So yep. Thanks very much, guys. Have a great day. Stay warm.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Long underwear day.
Yep. And enjoy yourself out there in your short sleeve shirt and shorts, Tim.
I didn't bring any short sleeve shirts or shorts, but yep. I don't have to wear a heavy coat.
All right. All right. Take care, gentlemen.
Hey, you too.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye now.
Where I used to wear a smile, and now it's just a frown. Cause I don't know what to do since you ain't around. Too much time on my hand. You do something that no one can. Lonesome blues.